Professor Resnick's presentation is a very good segue to Bert Brandenburg's presentation. Bert Brandenburg is executive director of the Justice at Stake campaign, which is a coalition of 50 different organizations dedicated to promoting fair and impartial courts and the pressures on particularly the state judiciary and the elected judiciary have been his focus for the last several years. So we've got some technical issues, but let me call on Bert to...
We're going to try to reciprocate by playing his DVD.
Right. You'll see some things that are a little bit hair-raising.
Yes, thank you. And I have to say, I was just valiantly trying to help Professor Resnick with her video. When I was in school, it was film strips that were the medium of choice, and it was always the cool guy who got to run the film strips. So that was never me, and I'm just really pleased to be able to do that. I think it was Professor Din, because he's the one who actually showed me how to do it. So my career plans never included the phrase, "I want to thank the Academy," but that's how I will start. This is an extreme honor for me to be here. I also want to acknowledge my co-author, Roy Schotlin, in the piece you'll see in Daedalus that goes over what I am about to describe. But essentially, what I am here to do is to give you a quick guided tour and kind of fill out a little bit of what Justice O'Connor was beginning to talk about with the threat in particular to our state courts. And they, of course, are our workhorses for all the glamour that the federal courts and rock stars like Supreme Court justices get. State courts handle something like 98% plus of our legal proceedings in America, and of our state judges in America, more than 85% of them have to face an election of one kind or another, either a competitive election against an opponent or a retention race in which they can either be kept or fired. And these judicial elections, as has been mentioned, are under growing pressure. They used to be relatively tame. There is now a new politics of judicial elections featuring money, ads, questionnaires, and the goal of the people who are really bringing this about is to make courts accountable to interest groups and partisans instead of the law and the Constitution. Justice O'Connor has described them as becoming political prize fights, and I think that is very apt. And we see, for example, since 1999, Supreme Court justices having to raise in excess of $150 million, often from the very people who appear before them in court. 15 states have smashed their spending records. TV ads, some of which I will show you in a minute, are threatening public confidence, impartial courts. Questionnaires that judges receive on the campaign trail on hot button issues like abortion and same-sex marriage essentially seek to intimidate judges into complying with political demands. Check the box justice, as it were. Are you with us or are you against us? Voter turnout in these races is often very low, and therefore they're especially easily swayed by pressure and partisanship. So you see, for example, in Dallas County, Texas, 2 years ago, 19 Republican judges were turned out simply because they had the R by their name, and it happened to be more of a Democratic Party year. Public confidence is ebbing. 3 in 4 Americans believe that these campaign contributions influence judges' decisions. 80% of business executives agree. Even scarier to me is that nearly half of state judges agree with that statement, that campaign contributions are affecting decisions in the courtroom. I should add that in addition to the fear of what this does to justice and the judges' decisions, it has a palpable effect on the quality of candidates who are going to be willing to run if the races are going to become this way. So, what happened in 2008? I would say it's been another tough year. As we looked at what happened both in the elections a few days ago and in some important primaries in states that elect their Supreme Courts, we saw 23 seats contested in 13 states. And the final pre-election disclosures showed that the candidates had raised in excess of $29 million. That figure will go up as we get more reports in. That's almost identical to the figure raised at the same point in 2006. Estimated spending on TV ads, which are becoming kind of the way you now run for Supreme Court, totaled $17 million, a little bit more than 2006. That is, by the way, thanks to almost $5 million that was spent just last week on state Supreme Court ads in media markets around America. The most expensive election occurred in Alabama, where the two opponents raised together a total of at least $3.8 million. Again, this figure will probably climb. And in addition, you had a Virginia-based group, not based in Alabama, but wanting to influence the election, which put in another $800,000 of its own on behalf of one of the candidates, who I believe has won in a squeaker. So that influence may well have been decisive, according to what we are hearing. And in addition, something like as I mentioned, $17 million was spent on ads, and if things work out well, we may be a click away from seeing a few of the ads that showed in this year's campaigns.
Which one?
You want Wisconsin? You want us to
all
go on water?
All of them.
Okay, here we go.
Meet Mike Gableman. He wanted to be a judge, but he had a few problems. Burnett County needed a judge, but Gableman lived 290 miles away. An independent panel recommended two finalists, but he didn't make the list. He even missed the application deadline. But weeks before the selection, Gableman hosted a fundraiser for Governor Scott McCallum and gave him $1,250. Guess who McCallum picked? Gableman. Tell Mike Gableman we need higher ethical standards for our judges. Meet Mike Gableman. He wanted to be a judge, but he had a few problems.
Sorry.
Unbelievable. Shadowy special interests supporting Lewis Butler are attacking Judge Michael Gableman. It's not true. Judge, District Attorney Michael Gableman has committed his life to locking up criminals to keep families safe, putting child molesters behind bars for over 100 years. Lewis Butler worked to put criminals on the street. Like Reuben Lee Mitchell, who raped an 11-year-old girl with learning disabilities. Butler found a loophole. Mitchell went on to molest another child. Can Wisconsin families feel safe with Lewis Butler on the Supreme Court? Unbelievable. Shadow.
Here, outside Washington, D.C., there's a bank account with $500,000 from the likes of the gas and oil industry. That money is paying for the ad you see here.
We have judges like Greg Shaw.
It sounds nice, but the $500,000 paying for it doesn't come from Alabama. So when you see the ad, ask yourself, what does the likes of the gas and oil industry want from our court? Here, out.
Newspapers call Diane Hathaway unqualified for the Supreme Court. Remember the low sentence Hathaway gave a sex predator that targeted a minor? There's more. Hathaway granted probation to a man who was arrested in camouflage paint while carrying a loaded AK-47. His webpage praised terrorists and declared his own personal jihad. Probation for a terrorist sympathizer? We're at war with terrorists. Diane Hathaway, out of touch. Newspapers.
One story's a fairy tale, the other's a nightmare. The fairy tale, Sleeping Beauty. The nightmare, the sleeping judge, Cliff Taylor.
Judge Taylor fell asleep several times in the middle of our argument. How could he judge based on the facts when he was asleep?
Taylor was voted the worst judge on the state Supreme Court. And fellow judges called for an investigation of Taylor for misconduct and abuse of power. The sleeping judge, Cliff Taylor, he needs a wake-up call.
Got one.
On the French Riviera, where the rich and famous play, Spike and Don spent a very pleasant day. While together, the time they were spending, a matter of millions in court was pending. Now when Massey first won their appeal, it was Spike's vote that sealed the deal. Justice is blind, but you can see, Spike showed bad judgment in hearing this plea. Spike has recused, but what will it take for the justice himself to admit his mistake? You decide how this story ends. Is justice for all or just between friends?
There's not much more I suppose I have to say. I will mention that actually in a minute what happened to Chief Justice Taylor. I would suggest to you that these ads, and obviously in politics, information is the lifeblood of what a voter needs to make an informed choice. But in terms of actually educating the public, given how low profile these races are and given how little information people have when they go to the vote, if this is the mainstay of the diet, it's the equivalent of what French fries is to nutrition in terms of the ability to make an informed choice. And so, for example, we saw examples this year of the special interest support itself becoming a core issue in judicial elections. Chief Justice Taylor, described as the quote-unquote sleeping judge, lost his election. It was actually a bit of a shocker. He was not expected to lose. Part of it actually was a set of different ads attacking him for being too close to business interests. I would add as well that we've heard, I don't know the answer here, but I've heard credibly that allegation that he fell asleep in the courtroom may well be a lie. That was a reenactment. And if that is indeed the case, we may have someone who was essentially ousted because of what somebody could make up and put on a television ad. The Chief Justice in Mississippi lost his seat this year, again, for being tied to, in this case, business interests. And the chief, the justice in West Virginia, who you saw in the last ad, was also, he lost in the primary because he was linked to a particular business executive who he was vacationing with in the French Riviera. These photos came out and his career was over. What we see increasingly is that the courts, once again, are vulnerable to whatever the political wind of the year is. So I mentioned what happened in Texas 2 years ago. It just happened again in Harris County, which is where Houston is. 22 out of 26 experienced Republican circuit court justices, judges rather, were swept off the bench because of a straight ticket Democratic vote. We are also seeing signs that the runaway spending that we track mostly at the state Supreme Court level is continuing to trickle down to more local judicial races. We've heard one report that in Los Angeles, for example, combined spending on two of the five Superior Court races there exceeded $500,000 for circuit court seats. One other interesting trend worth noting is that the voters in a few counties around the United States had a chance to vote on a different way of selecting judges. It was alluded to a little bit earlier, but merit selection and retention systems, which many states have, where you have a screening committee up front and then retention elections on the back end. They're often seen as a desirable alternative to the kind of wild west of contested elections, but they're very hard to enact from a political standpoint. It cuts against the kind of populist grain. America does like to elect its judges. What's significant is that, and I think perhaps in reaction to what's been going on over the last decade, we actually saw several counties this year embrace merit selection, in one case rejecting an effort to do away with it, in another case actually enacting it in a very conservative county in Missouri, and a couple counties in Alabama as well. What's also significant this year compared to 2 years ago is what's not on the ballot. And this is some good news I would deliver as well, which is the sense that there were no statewide referenda, unlike 2 years ago, aimed at weakening the courts or compromising them as fair and impartial arbiters. There was a proposal 2 years ago called Jail for Judges in South Dakota, which is not far off from what its nickname was, and it essentially would have done away with judicial immunity, which destroys the ability of any judge to even be able to do their job and not be sued for making a decision. It was defeated decisively 2 years ago, and we were pleased to see it actually has not come back because the public rejected it so decisively. So looking ahead, the next cycle, 2 years from now, there will be essentially setting the stage for more meltdown contests. Candidates from 16 states are scheduled to contest 35 Supreme Court seats. In 10 states, there will be multiple races, several justices up at the same time. We usually see that this is a signal that interest groups will get more value for their dollar if they jump in. And there is, however, growing interest in measures to address the problem. I mentioned merit selection. Several states are looking at moving there. In addition, any state that elects judges can consider public financing of their judge races so the judges don't have to dial for dollars from the people who appear before them. In addition, there's a growing interest in recusal as a possible solution. Nonpartisan voter guides can help people get that information they need for the kind of nutritious choice I was mentioning before. And campaign conduct committees can actually help temper some of the campaign conduct that judges feel increasingly pressured to engage in, or that interest groups inflict on some of these races. And I will close by now echoing what's becoming a theme here in terms of the importance of independent courts. And I would just sort of add that courts can only be impartial if they are sufficiently independent. And it is absolutely true, however, that the American people and the framers of the Constitution wanted judges to be independent and accountable. This is always messy, it's always complicated. And yet, just as Justice O'Connor described different definitions of independence, and Roy Bean had his own, there are different definitions of accountability at work that I want to kind of close with, because they, I think, are key to this whole issue, particularly when it comes to the issue of electing judges. It's to whom are you accountable? We know we want judges to be accountable. The risk is that they won't be accountable to the law and the Constitution, that the pressures that are building up on them will make them accountable instead to partisans and interest groups and special interest pressure. So I would simply finish by saying that I don't expect the Academy to necessarily take this issue up at its 1,932nd meeting. However, I hope it won't be another 2,000 meetings before you come back to this, because it's absolutely true, as has been said here, that the life of the courts depends upon strong support and people standing by them, even if they disagree with their decisions. This country has had a rather good run in that regard. However, without vigilance, it can erode, as we have seen overseas. Thank you again.